Welcome to Main Street. I'm Ashley Thornburg. Coming up later in the show, a movie review and baseball.
It's opening day. I'm wearing my St. Louis Cardinals sweatshirt.
Yes, you seem happy, very excited opening day. But we are going to start today talking about travel. Vacations are great. They break us from our habits, but let's be real. There are bills to pay, kids to feed. We can't always take time for that. So instead, we're going to cultivate productive indulgence.
Productive indulgence?
Yeah, this idea that rest, investing in yourself, these create a sense of ease, calm, creativity. They're good for your mental health. And I'll admit, I was a workaholic until I realized that I was avoiding important conversations at home and about myself and my values. And values are an important part of the vacation equation. So today we visit with travel writer Alicia Underlie-Nelson about the art of the staycation. What would be some elements for you for a staycation?
Well, I think the first thing that we need to remind ourselves is that even places that are familiar to us, the place that we live or the place that we visit, maybe every weekend to go shopping or to visit family, that is still a vacation destination for someone else. So what is familiar to us is exotic to someone else. So you don't have to go very far to find a place that can be a little bit of an adventure. So I like to think about the kind of experiences that I like to have on vacation and think about how I can recreate that close to home. Now, and I think this is really exciting, too, because I have heard so many reports of people, like, coming from Bismarck and spending time in Fargo and, like, really living it up, like getting a bunch of girlfriends together or couples or having a kind of a romantic staycation closer to home. And I think that's really exciting because you don't have to go far, you don't have to spend a lot of money, but you still feel when you kind of treat yourself to these kinds of experiences that maybe you wouldn't have a special dinner or getting manicures and pedicures with your friends or maybe a spa day, the kind of thing that maybe you only splurge on if you're in a different city or a different state.
Sure.
You give yourself permission to do that on a random Saturday. Everything seems a little bit more exciting. And I think the biggest thing for a staycation for me is make sure that you're doing those really indulgent things, those things that feel like a treat. So kind of make a list of what feels like, oh, I couldn't do that on a weekday because I have to be responsible and go to work. Okay, what is that thing that you would love to do? Go to movies all day in the afternoon, you know, take off on a Friday and go watch movies all day, leaning into what you enjoy or, you know, making a dent in that list of restaurants that you wanted to try for weeks and months and it keeps growing. That can feel amazing. And the other thing that I think is really important, if you're doing a staycation, whether you're doing it in your home city or your home state, or you're going maybe a short day trip away, is to pay more attention to the lodging option than you normally would. Now, normally, for me personally, I'm kind of a location, location, location person, right? So I want the best value, but the understanding that maybe I'm not going to be in my hotel room or my Airbnb very much. But with a staycation, I think it's kind of okay to splurge a little bit. Maybe if you're in a hotel loyalty program, to use those points. They go a long way toward properties in the Midwest, so you can get upgraded a little bit. A lot of hotel properties around the region are also, if you have like a boutique hotel that you follow, they have really great weekend stay options where they're going to upgrade you, or they're going to give you some cocktails, or they're going to give you something to make it an experience so you don't have to work so hard. Mm. I think that's really important because I have had some really epic staycations. One of them under duress, we actually had, my husband had a non-refundable hotel room for a concert he was supposed to go to during the pandemic. It was a great hotel in Minneapolis downtown, and it's non-refundable. So we went, you know, we wore our masks and we got food delivered, splurged a little bit, upgraded our, you know, our room so that the two of us and our son could like really relax. We watched a bunch of Las Vegas, which is my husband's favorite comfort TV show. We watched a Las Vegas marathon, saw these beautiful views, went walking in downtown Minneapolis. Anything that kind of has a lot of built-in entertainment is going to be a good option for you. So splurge on the place with the great gym. Splurge on the place that has a steam shower or, you know, an upgraded bathtub or the hot tub in the room. Like, now is the time. Treat yourself. You don't even have to leave the hotel room if you don't want to. This is your permission. And actually, I have a long history of staycations. When I was growing up, I grew up about 30 miles north of Moorhead, and we didn't have a lot of money. And but my parents love to get away. And so we lived in a really small town. So if you're from a small town, you know there's maybe one place to eat in town. If you're real lucky, there's two and a gas station perhaps. So for us, it was incredible. Nothing fancy at all. We'd get something like a Super 8, right? We'd roll up, my mom, my dad, my brother and sister and myself, and we would order pizza every night if we wanted. And we would get to watch cable TV, which we did not have. And there was a pool, okay? And now anybody that's traveled with kids knows that, like, even the most so-so hotel pool is going to feel kind of epic when you're in the right mood.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we do that, and we go to West Acres. And it wasn't like we didn't go to West Acres on the weekends when we came to town anyway. We did. But this was different because I got to rent. This is back in the renting movies days. So, yes, I'm aging myself. Got to rent Jim and the Holograms and eat takeout pizza and stay up as late as we wanted. Mm. And it felt so indulgent and it felt so fun. And I have a friend who for milestone birthdays will ask me recommendations for great hotels around town and do much the same thing. Log in. She has her Netflix and her Hulu passwords and she'll watch shows. She'll eat everything that she wants to eat. She'll hang out. She'll take long showers. And she doesn't have to clean up afterward. It's fun, right? So, like, you can do that alone, solo if you want, or you can do something similar with a bunch of friends. It feels really indulgent, but we're Midwesterners. We need permission to do that, and this is your permission.
Okay, that is the fourth time now that you've said the word permission. Let's talk about that. What do you think it is about maybe specifically the Midwestern stoicism that we grapple so much with this idea of permission?
I think we feel guilty having too much fun. We feel guilty spending too much money. If I had a dollar for every time I heard someone say, I don't need to do that. No, of course not. We don't need to look at art either. We don't need to listen to music either. We don't need it to live
physically.
Except
when you talk about mental health.
Right. But I think we need it. That's the difference, see? We don't need it physically, immediately, to stay alive from moment to moment. But we need it for our souls to feel connected to people around us, to feel a deeper sense of purpose, to feel wonder. Like, these things are so important. And I was helping a friend of mine plan a birthday trip. She wanted to go back to Minneapolis, St. Paul. She said, well, I'll just go one night so I can be back. I said, why? You have all this time off. Why not stay another night? Well, I don't need to stay another night. Mm. No, of course not. But why don't you? She stopped a moment. She said, you know what? I don't know. I think her reaction is very typical. We say, I don't need that. I don't need to go out every day. Oh, I don't need to spend that kind of money. Except if we are lucky enough to have it, none of us is getting out of this life alive and we're not taking any of that with us. So I'm not encouraging people to live beyond their means. I'm not encouraging people to go in debt to travel out of the country or even to travel in your own town. But if you have a little bit to spare, I think you can find great dining out experiences for about the same as you spend for fast food. And that's a different experience that you're having. It's something that feels special. It's something that you'll remember. And we can do that. You know, we're not bad people if we treat ourselves every now and again. And I think getting in the habit of doing that is really transformative. Like, I believe very strongly that bring out the good china, buy yourself flowers, sit on the deck and enjoy the sunshine a little extra time. Your kid wants to go to a movie. Take them out. Why not? Make it a double feature because we only get a limited amount of time to enjoy the things that we love and to spend time with the people that we love and to explore the interests that make us want to get up in the morning. And I think so much of the time we put our heads down, we work hard, and there's almost a culture of martyrdom around people that like to, I haven't used my vacation in 15 years. That makes me so sad because we have that for a reason. It's necessary for our mental health, for balance, to help pour into our families and our friendships and our own mental well-being. It's there for a reason. And sometimes things happen. I get it. Sometimes money's tight. Sometimes we don't have a lot of time. Sometimes we want to use that time and energy for different things and those funds. But I think if we get out of the habit of not treating ourselves well, whether we're traveling far away or we're doing something fun close to home, I think it becomes harder and harder to give ourselves permission, there's that word again, to do that. And that's part of the human experience, is being out and enjoying life and being together. And you and I, before we started recording this, were just talking about the Caribbean. And I think when I traveled in that region, I'm especially thinking about time in Puerto Rico, the things that we did there were just what the locals were doing, and it wasn't anything fancy. We just would bring a cooler to the beach and buy some stuff from the vendors, and we got to listen to everybody else listening to their music and picnicking mm-hmm. and hanging out. And I just, like, it was so cool to listen to people chatting about how they did this every weekend. They did it every Friday. They did it every Thursday after work. There are things that we can build into our own lives here. We don't have to wait for summer. We don't have to wait for our designated vacation week if we don't want to. We can take a weekend right now and do it. You can do something indulgent and take a Wednesday off in the middle of the week if you want. Like, there's so many ways to live kind of outside of those responsible, respectable Midwestern boxes that we put ourselves into. It's fun to be thrifty. I love it too, but, you know, it's still a bargain to go and have a staycation in Grand Forks or Bismarck or Fargo or even, you know, Minneapolis or pop up to Manitoba. It's still affordable. So we can still feel good and virtuous about that, but have a little fun too.
What about the idea of being very literal with this term staycation? Maybe it's even a blizzard and you literally can't get out your door.
Oh, I love this.
Chocolate
actually.
Chip pancakes? What are we doing here?
Absolutely. Like, if the pandemic taught me anything, it was how many interesting ways that I could find to amuse myself. And I know it might be too soon to bring that up for many of our listeners today. But think of the things that we really dove into, whether that was, you know, baking or
everyone made sourdough bread all of a sudden.
Right, yeah. Right. It blizzarded this weekend and I made 2 loaves of pumpkin bread and about 7,000 pumpkin chocolate chip cookies. So, like, that instinct is strong. So I think do something that you enjoy. Pull out those art projects. Get a stack of library books. Oh, man, you don't have to spend any money at all. You don't have to go anywhere. I put a bunch of books on hold and magazines and bring them back and have some nice coffee and then switch to tea later in the afternoon and read and watch the snowfall.
I've been giving myself permission to go to bed at 8.
Oh, that's wonderful. We need that. We don't have to use every single hour of the day. Sleep is super important. Yeah, sleep in. Take naps if you want. I mean, there's so many amazing things that we can, and I say do, but what I kind of mean is like not do. I read an article, and I wish I could remember where it was now, but they talked about rotting in bed, and I thought that is like such a disturbing image. But they're like, no, that is the level of activity that I aspire to. And by activity, I mean no activity. And I thought that is really hard for me as a person. So I've been trying to do like my version of that, which is just ease.
Being cozy.
And quiet. And rest. You know, lighting candles, using the good china, ordering food in if you want to, getting mm-hmm. that pizza delivered. Just telling yourself, I'm taking a Saturday maybe or a Sunday yeah. of rest. That old-fashioned thing that, I mean, many religions from the dawn of time have told us that a day of rest is important. A time of rest, a time to disconnect mm-hmm. and be still. Matters.
Yeah.
So we know this in our bones, but we resist it just as hard.
You know, NPR had an interesting series years ago on bored but brilliant mm-hmm. and the kinds of things that happen in your brain when you do rest. And we're seeing this happen with workplaces shifting over to a 4-day work week and seeing retention rates higher, employee happier, and productivity increase.
Rest. Balance. And our brains think differently when there's room and time and space to dream and to sort of sit in soft focus, to do something with our hands that doesn't necessarily require our brains. The science of the human brain is that's how we've evolved through most of our history. So we're at peace with that. So if you're kneading sourdough bread like we were talking about, or maybe you bust out some watercolor paints, or you start, it's almost time to start planting seeds for the garden and putting those in the windowsill, the perfect time to do that. You can make a staycation of doing these nice little tasks. I like to put on, you know, the radio or put on podcasts that I like, put on some music, an interesting playlist, and just see what happens. Just putter around. I think we've really lost the ability to do that. And I think at the heart, the staycation is sort of like the vacation version of puttering, you know, because it's a place that, you know, you've removed that pressure of I must see everything. I must do everything because if you miss something, guess what? You live nearby. You can do it again. And that's kind of a huge relief that I try to bring a little bit of that everywhere that I travel, because there's always this human desire that I'm going to see everything. I'm going to fully understand this place before I go. And of course, that's not possible. It's not even possible for places that we've lived in our whole lives, if that's our situation. Yeah. Places are always evolving. We're always evolving. So I think if you remove that pressure and just let yourself lean into what you enjoy, and, you know, putter around, wander around, whether that's your own house or your own city or a place in your own state, and you will find things that surprise you. And I think that's what we really crave from those mental health days when we take them. That's what we crave from vacations when we take them. The challenge is starting, taking that first step, clocking out, turning off the notifications to your phone if you can dare to do it, and giving yourself time to just be. And to see what occurs to you in the silence and then that next step, to see where you want to go next. And to be okay with not knowing. Be okay with if somebody says, what did you do on your weekend away? Or what did you do on your Sunday off? Just say nothing. Because you know what you did. You've rested. And that's enough. If that's all you do, that's enough.
Travel writer Alicia Underlie Nelson on staycations. And for your next staycation, I wish you non-voyage.
Oh, beautiful. Same.
On Major League Baseball's opening day, we'll recall one of baseball's most peculiar plays. On August 31st, 1987, the play took place in a minor league park in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. The age-old hidden ball trick, except it involved a potato.
Oh, this I gotta hear.
In this story, we'll hear from the man responsible for the play and two people who witnessed it.
It was a really strange night. We had a good crowd. I mean, it was one of those really boiling nights where at any moment things are going to explode. So you had this kind of haze over the ballpark, this old ballpark. The dog days of August, this was the dog day of August.
My name is Dave Bresnahan. In 1987, I was a Class AA player with the Cleveland Indians organization. My position was catcher, and the team name was Williamsport Bills of the AA Eastern League. We were scheduled to have a doubleheader, which I chose that day because I knew I would catch one game of the doubleheader. And it was twilight, which was actually kind of a perfect setting. When I saw my name in the lineup in the first game, you know, I had brought three or four peeled potatoes to the game. And in the locker room, we were, you know, throwing the potatoes around. So it wasn't a big secret within the team.
I'm Rick Muntean, and in 1987, I was the assistant general manager of the Williamsport Bills. I was cooking hamburgers down the right field line. Great view of the plate.
My name is Lou Hunsinger, Jr. On August 31st, 1987, I was sitting in the third base grandstands. I can't recall exactly what inning it was. I know that there was a Reading Philly runner on third base. There was a batter up for them. And the runner on third base took his normal lead.
There was a moment there right before the play that was, you know, part of baseball, but now looking back on it was the trigger. Dave stood up, called timeout, said there was something wrong with his mitt.
In the dugout was a spare catcher's glove, and in the glove was the peeled potato. So I had to turn to the umpire, and I remember his name, it was Scott Potter. He did make it as a big league umpire for a few years. And I turned to Potter and said, "Hey, Scott, you know, my glove's broke. I need to get another one." He goes, "Sure, go ahead." So I trot over to the dugout, and in my bag is that spare glove with the peeled potato in it, and all my teammates are all kind of laughing, can't believe I'm going to do it. So as I ran back to the home plate area, I had the peeled potato in my glove as I gave the sign, and I had to make sure that the hitter didn't hit the baseball. So I called for a slider low and away, and just before the pitch was thrown, I moved it from my glove hand over to my bare hand and caught the slider, and then came up, took the potato and threw it over the third baseman's head.
Pressing the hand cocks and throws, and the object flies into left field, which I thought was a baseball, and everybody else did too, and so did the runner, and he then continued down to home.
Here he comes, running towards home, and I thought, oh my God, it's working. So I just wanted to be patient, wait for the runner to, just before he touched home plate, I tagged him.
Now the best part of it all was Bresnahan standing at the plate laughing. He was laughing at home plate as the runner was Rick Lundblade, and he came down the third base line, and as he got to the plate, Bresnahan just all of a sudden was standing there laughing and tagged him out, and the umpire, Scott Potter, originally said out, called him out.
There was confusion. The fans were confused. It looked like the umpire was confused. The runner most certainly was confused. The only one that wasn't confused was Bresnahan, because he'd known what he had done.
And I showed the umpire the ball, rolled it up on the mound, and told all my teammates to come, you know, off the field and into the dugout, but they were all laughing.
And I saw our left fielder, Miguel Roman, pick up the potato, which I didn't know was a potato. He picked up the potato, and the look on his face, I think, kind of stunned everybody because he didn't do anything with it. He just picked it up, looked at it, and just looked back at the infield.
The third base coach for the Phillies, he sees what it is, and he starts laughing. And then the third base umpire, who's from New York, and he retrieves the largest piece, and he walks back towards the home plate umpire, and he yells out, "It's a freaking potato!"
And all of a sudden, somebody brought the potato into the infield. And Bresnahan, of course, said, "Yeah, I peeled a potato, whatever."
Despite some reports, I didn't get kicked out of the game. The umpire just ruled the runner safe, and then we got the next hitter out. And as I went back to the dugout, my manager didn't seem to be real pleased. He pinched it for me, took me out of the game. So that was it, and I was glad the team won, and I thought that would be the end of it. And it wasn't. It sure wasn't.
The word got around immediately, and our phone did not stop ringing off the hook about, this guy's a bum, I hope he's gone, get him out of town, all that stuff. You have to know Williamsport. Williamsport, the birthplace of Little League Baseball. They take it seriously over there.
As sort of a semi-baseball purist, I was appalled by this, what I perceived to be a Bush League stunt. I didn't like it one bit when it happened.
I didn't really anticipate anything. I woke up the next morning and got a phone call from our trainer saying that Orlando wanted to see me in his office. I knew it wasn't good news, so I took a cab and went to the clubhouse, and Orlando told me that, you know, they're going to release me.
So I was there when he came back to clean out his locker. Well, he walked in, put a potato in every locker. And he walks into the manager's office and counted out 50, put 50 right on the desk, and he put a note on the potatoes that said, "Dear Orlando, sure you don't expect me to pay the $50 fine now that I've been released. Instead, here's 50 potatoes. This spud's for you, Dave Bresnahan." And he tacked it on one of the potatoes. And at that moment, he became my all-time hero when he did that.
And so when I read that, I really started chuckling about it. And I thought, well, maybe this isn't so bad. You know, like I said, it took a couple days for me to realize that probably this is part of the essence of what, you know, the fun and good heartedness that our national game is supposed to represent.
Then it all started. Then it all, the world cracked open for Dave Bresnahan at that point. I can't read off or remember all of the people that he was on, but I know he was on the baseball game of the week. He was on Paul Harvey.
"Hello, Americans. This is Paul Harvey."
And my phone was ringing off the hook. Papers from L.A. to New York were calling me, and radio stations were calling me across the country.
When he was on Paul Harvey, that did it for Williamsport. Now he was their hero. Naturally, everybody in town was there that night, and it was great. I loved it. It was great. So it was pretty neat how the reaction changes. But it was Paul Harvey. They heard him on Paul Harvey. The word got around town. I mean, this guy's pretty neat, and it's national news, and we're on the map now and all this stuff.
In May of the following year, they decided to do a Dave Bresnahan night, retire my number, and make, you know, a big promotional event.
When we announced that we were going to retire the potato thrower's number, then it went wild. It was the largest crowd in Williamsport history.
If people brought potatoes to the game, a potato, they could get in for a dollar, and of course the food we donated to the local food bank.
And the box office when we closed was filled to the top with potatoes. Women were coming over, pulling their tops down, having them autograph their breasts.
My speech went something like this, where, you know, Lou Gehrig had to hit 350 and hit over 400 home runs to get his number retired. All I had to do was hit 149 and throw a potato to get mine retired. And I don't think the baseball gods are looking down on me and shaming me for that at all.
This story came to us from Long Haul Productions, which documents stories of everyday lives, stories of people and communities in transition, and stories of ordinary people accomplishing extraordinary things. The news is next. I've been listening to your show on the radio,
and you seem like a friend to me. You're listening to Prairie Public right now, so I bet you're a bit of a news junkie, right?
But do you also like music? Well, I bet you do. Prairie Public is the place for that too. Did you know that we have a guy named Mike Olson who spins adult album alternative music during the week?
There goes the last DJ who plays what he wants to play.
He's got an endless library, limitless musical knowledge, and a clever way of handcrafting sets of songs. You can listen to Prairie Public's Roots Rock and Jazz stream on an app or a smart speaker pretty much anywhere, and on an HD radio anywhere in the region. Check out Mike Olson on Prairie Public weekdays from 9 a.m. to 10 and noon to 6 p.m.
Welcome back to Main Street on Prairie Public. We bring in Prairie Public's news director, Dave Thompson. Dave, you've got a big decision to make. Needed to find that walk-up tune for you. We played one last week, and now here's the next one for you to consider.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Gather around, everybody. I'm gonna tell you a story.
That song put a smile on my face.
We have two for you to pick from, yes. Remember. Last week, we played this. So, Dave, now as I warned you in the email I sent you a little earlier this morning, this is the most important decision you're ever going to make. Which one of those two clips is going to be Dave Thompson's walk-up music? And walk-up is appropriate for today, Dave, because it's opening day of Major League Baseball.
Exactly. Perfect. That's right. Considering both, like them both a lot, but I think I'll go with number one.
Okay. That's from Bill Haley and his comments. Of course, they were an American rock band, mm-hmm. best known for Rock Around the Clock, at least in my mind. I did some research on the second clip from a group called the Jeanettes, Dave. They were
Jeanettes, Sally Go Round the Roses, a great song.
That was their one hit, their one hit wonder. And interestingly enough, they caught a huge break when American Bandstand signed the Jeanettes to Dick Clark's Caravan of Stars U.S. National Tour.
Very good.
Right when JFK was assassinated. Oh. So they canceled that tour, and with that, the momentum that the Jeanettes had, they kind of faded away. And of course, we all remember Rock Around the Clock from Bill Haley.
Exactly.
And we'll use Bill Haley and his comments for Dave Thompson's walk-up music. Dave, do you have a favorite Major League Baseball team before we start reviewing the news today?
Well, as I've been saying to people, I've loved the Minnesota Twins because they're close, and I've seen the Twins play in person. I like the Twins, and I like the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Uh-oh. You and I are going to have words after today, Dave, because I am wearing my St. Louis Cardinals sweatshirt.
Well, I used to listen to the St. Louis Cardinals when I was growing up.
KMOX.
On KMOX. I'd tune in my little airline transistor radio and listen to it.
Well, I love the Cardinals. Always have. First team I ever got to see play when I was 9 years old. Quick story, my parents were stationed at Scott Air Force Base. My dad was stationed at Scott Air Force Base across the river, and they would give blood and in return get tickets to Cardinals games. And my brother and I got to see the Cardinals play the Giants in the first game that I ever watched. So I got to see Bob Gibson pitch. I got to see Willie Mays hit, Lou Brock, and it was a memory that I'll always have. So
I have one quick story about that, going to the Minnesota Twins, where they played at the old Metropolitan Stadium. I went to a doubleheader with the Baltimore Orioles, and I saw Earl Weaver, the manager of the Orioles, get kicked out of both games.
Did he dust the umpire's shoes with dirt?
And the second one he did.
He could get so feisty. All right, Dave, on to the news of the week. A big announcement from Prairie Public. You'll be moderating the Republican gubernatorial debate on Tuesday, April 23rd. That'll be at 7 o'clock and broadcast live on Prairie Public. So, Dave, as you begin to think about the debate, what are a couple topics you think North Dakotans will be most concerned about in this election season relative to that race?
Well, I think a couple of things. Number one, economic development issues are going to be high. Second, tax relief issues are going to be high, and property taxes especially. There's a lot of talk about income taxes. But the thing about property taxes, the state does not levy property taxes. The state can only provide relief from the coffers to hope that local governments will hold down property taxes that they levy against their people. I think those are going to be major. Also, the issue of the Summit Carbon Solutions pipeline probably will come up in the debate. And I'm honestly thinking, what's going to happen with the state's legacy fund? Do there need to be some changes? So it's a lot of financial issues, plus a couple of environmental issues.
As someone who has moderated several gubernatorial debates in Wyoming, I'll be most interested, Dave, and you don't need to give the secrets away now is your approach to moderating the debate. Maybe we'll talk about that maybe just before or just after the debate. So
certainly.
Looking forward to that. Really looking forward to watching that. Again, that will be April 23rd at 7 o'clock Central right here on Prairie Public.
I will tell you this, Craig. My idea is as a debate moderator, you're a facilitator. It is the candidates who are debating who really get the attention. So I try to ask a question, then stay out of the way. But you have to sometimes tell people time is up and keep things moving on that. So it's a bit of a challenge, but I enjoy it.
Hopefully, from my perspective, the candidates will stay on topic and answer your questions rather than diverting to mudslinging or talking about topics that really aren't appropriate to the question you ask them. So we'll all be watching for sure.
Thank you, Craig.
On to the news this week. The three affiliated chairmen said oil development has really helped their reservations and individual landowners. You reported about that.
I did, as kind of a story to go off the billion barrels that were taken from the three affiliated tribes. Chairman Mark Fox is very much in favor of oil development because he said, first off, it's really helping landowners because they're able to afford some things they weren't able to afford before. And also, it's helped the tribe with some of their infrastructure issues. And three affiliated is really an interesting story because they've got a lot going on. And when they're talking about carbon capture from oil wells or from coal, three affiliated tribes has a plan to build some fairly extensive greenhouses to use the CO2 for growing plants. Now, there are entrepreneurs on the reservation. They seem to be stepping up a bit. And, you know, it's helped with roads, helped with schools, helped with bridges, and just helped the quality of life on the reservation just get that much better.
Another story you've talked about, Dave, is a cash management study that now is underway for the state of North Dakota. This has been important for Governor Burgum. And the idea here is, do we have too much cash and are we having that cash on hand instead of having it work for us and maybe gain more money for us appropriately invested?
Yeah, what you said there is very true. And that's what Governor Burgum is saying. You put money in cream cans, it doesn't make any interest, doesn't do anything for you. But if you invest it, then you get on a return on the investment. And he argues, and I think he has some very good points here, that that will help the bottom line going forward. You'll have more money from the ROI to spend on state priorities. So he said, we need to find out if there's a better way than just putting it in cream cans or in accounts that don't have any interest-bearing accounts.
When I read that news story that you wrote, Dave, I chuckled because in Wyoming, they are not cream cans, they are coffee cans.
Coffee cans, okay. Well, it was called buckets. It was called buckets at one point.
Okay. Dave, the North Dakota Secretary of State says artificial intelligence will not be used in the elections. And I looked at that headline and wondered, how could they be? A vote is a vote. It will be counted. Why was this an issue?
Because it has been an issue nationally about, you know, what AI is being used for in campaigns. So they're thinking, are you going to have to use AI for some kind of voter information or vote counting? And the Secretary of State's office says, no, we're just going to do it. We've got a good and very safe, shall we say, routine in place so that their ballot fraud has not been a problem in North Dakota. So they want to continue that. But a legislative committee was asking that question because they've been hearing a lot about AI. And when I was listening to the Deputy Secretary of State, Sandra McMurdy, she said, one thing that you have to look out is you have to look how AI is influencing campaigns and think twice before you share something as fact. Check it out. So that's something we've been talking about a lot.
Sure.
You know, make sure that, you know, if your mother says she loves you, check her sources, that type of thing.
I think the point is accurate, human-sourced information will be coming out of the Secretary of State's office.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. That is correct. And they want to be, as she said, the trusted source for election information.
Dave, over 2,000 pages now of former Attorney General Wayne Stegem's emails have been released. What have you learned since that happened on Wednesday?
So far, not a lot, but there's an awful lot of emails to go through. I know several news outlets are going through the emails, but we haven't learned too much about what's happened with the Jason Doctor situation where the office rented space for the BCI, the Bureau of Criminal Investigation, from Jason Doctor and that whole thing and what's happening there. And nothing else about the Holmberg matter either. There's been just not very much at all.
Dave, we're now days really away from both the Republican and Democratic state conventions that will be held here in Fargo. What should North Dakota voters really pay attention to as these conventions unfold.
Watch the votes, watch the discussions, and also watch what the candidates are saying to get the nominations. There are, of course, contested nominations, especially in the Republican Party. You have to watch that very carefully. The other side issues about some of these resolutions and the platform and the idea that there might be a purity test, that you must follow the party platform and vote that way in the legislature, that's going to be an interesting side issue to watch. But I think you need to listen to what the candidates are going to say when they really start their campaigns once they get the nominations and how they're going to take that. And there will be challenges in the primary for some of these races, so you have to listen to that as well.
Dave, your newsletter, Do You Know DAC? Dave, what are you working on?
What I'm working on for the next one is there is one office in state government, and there were a few more, that is nonpartisan. I'm talking about outside of the judiciary. The judges are elected nonpartisan, but one statewide office is the Department of Public Instruction. So I'm going to go through a little history of that and talk about a preview, because there are going to be some challenges for what is called not an endorsement by political parties, but letters of support.
Dave, it's always a pleasure to visit with you. Thanks for joining us on Main Street.
Thank you, Craig. Glad to do it.
Gather around, everybody. I'm gonna tell you a story about a little town.
That was Prairie Public's news director, Dave Thompson. More Main Streets ahead, including a movie review with Matt Olean. Stay with us.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Bill Dean, Realtor Broker with Alliance Real Estate of Bismarck. Buying, selling, investing, and estate planning. Information can be found at BillDeanHomes.com.
Debate season is here, and Prairie Public will host a pretty big one for this part of the world. It's the Republican primary contest for governor of North Dakota. I'm Dave Thompson. Join me and the candidates, Congressman Kelly Armstrong and Lieutenant Governor Tammy Miller, Tuesday, April 23rd at 7 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Mountain. You can listen on a radio, a smart speaker or app, watch Prairie Public television service, or stream online at prairiepublic.org. Prairie Public's Election 2024 coverage is made possible in part by AARP North Dakota.
And there's the fanfare. That means it's time to visit with Matt Olean, as we do each week. He's our in-house, so to speak, movie expert. Matt, it's great to see you back again on Main Street.
Thanks, Craig.
I know that you've had a busy time in your life here the last couple of weeks with the Fargo Film Festival, and we're going to have a little bit of a review from you about that here in a moment. But first, let's talk about this week's movies. Matt, you want to review Immaculate. It's a psychological horror movie that mixes horror and religion in a way that I don't know would be appealing to me. But what did you think of the show?
Yeah, if horror movies are not in your wheelhouse, this is not going to be a movie for you. If you're religious at all, this is not going to be a movie for you. So Sydney Sweeney is becoming a very, very big movie star, and she stars as this nun, Cecilia, journeys to Italy to join this convent, which is on the wonderful, beautiful Italian countryside. Everything seems great, right? She's going to have the convent life. The film is shot in Italy. It looks gorgeous, directed by Michael Mohan. But, of course, it's a horror movie, so you know things are not as they seem. And nefarious things are about and adrift with the nunnery and the priests and everything else, and that is essentially what it is. Now, you can tell by the title, Immaculate, where this is probably going. She is a modern-day Mary, modern-day Virgin Mary, and, you know, that's essentially the—
Matt, I just don't picture Sydney Sweeney in a religious movie, and of course—
No.
This is a psychological thriller. It just doesn't mix, but hey, she's a star.
So what they've done here is successfully, I think the film is fine. It is not going to make people forget about Rosemary's Baby or The Exorcist or The Omen or some of these great horror films like The Ring. For what it is, it's fine. There's a lot of gore. Sydney Sweeney's also the producer. She knows exactly what her assets are. So it's not just a religious movie with nuns walking about heavily garmented. There are scenes in bathtubs. There are scenes with see-through dresses where we see Miss Sweeney's assets and other nuns as well who have see-through garments. So it mixes religion and sex is what it does. And that is in order to get people in the theater. We see exactly what they're doing. And for that, it is absolutely fine. I think the film is a little too short. It's 89 minutes long. This film barely starts, and all of a sudden, she becomes the modern Mary. And what happens? Why is this going on? What's going on? How did this happen? One of the priests, played by Alvaro Morte, is impossibly good-looking. One of these priests that looks like he stepped out of a GQ cover, which normally they don't look like. But he comes off very nice at the beginning of the film. And you know where that's going, right, Craig? I think the film is too short. I would have let this film breathe a little bit more in the editing, because it is slam bam action from the very start. I think it needed to be 7 or 8 minutes longer with a couple of more scenes. It almost feels rushed to me. Look, she's got a scene near the end of the film where she is screaming for, it feels like, a minute. And it's an amazing piece of acting. Why she's screaming, you're going to have to go see the movie. So I think if you like horror movies, it's fine. But it's not going to set the world on fire. There's nothing here that's going to make it some kind of masterpiece or classic. But Sydney Sweeney knows what she's doing. She knows exactly her stardom. She's a producer on the film, and she packaged this for horror films. It made $5.3 million opening weekend. I think that's slightly disappointing, but not bad.
How did she do in the horror realm? Is she trying to expand her diversity here and what she maybe want to do down the road?
I think so. I think she's setting the groundwork for a big part down the road that could be, you know, Oscar bait type thing. She's talented. There's no question about it. She's got amazing eyes. She's easy to look at. I think she fits in fine with what she's trying to do with the film. But keep in mind, it's a horror movie with a wink, wink nod to the audience. So, of course, we're going to see her in a see-through gown. Of course, there's going to be blood and gore. That's what modern horror fans want, and they know exactly what buttons to push to make it a hit at the box office. It's not going to be a runaway hit at the box office. We'll see how the second weekend it does, but I liked it fine, didn't love it, didn't hate it. It's kind of right there in the middle for me. And let me just say, horror films are not my wheelhouse. They're not my cup of tea. There's some great ones in the history, but the continuing cycle of churning these things out, like Conjuring, Evil Dead, it just does not quite work for me. So I'm giving it a fair review that I think it's fine for what it is, but it's not a great film. And the people I know that saw it, nobody said it's a runaway great film. It's fine. It's average, slightly above average. And Sweeney, if not for Sydney Sweeney in this film, I'm not sure there'd be much reason to go see it.
Matt, a question that I've come across without giving away any spoilers. Can you discuss how the movie's conclusion contributes to the overall message or theme that they're trying to get across?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I do know some inside information that the ending of this film was discussed amongst, I did meet the producer of the film, or co-producer, Will Greenfield, and because he was at the Fargo Film Festival last week with Immaculate. So I think the ending was, they weren't quite sure how to end this movie. Here's the big thing I'll say without giving too much away. There's a lot of Rosemary's Baby territory here. You know, what is Mia Farrow carrying in her belly in that movie? What is Sydney Sweeney, the modern Mary? Ooh. What's going on? Will we see anything? Will we not see anything? If you remember Rosemary's Baby, we did see something at the end. Now, the ending of this film, we're not giving it away. You need to go see it. I would say it contributes to the theme of the film in terms of it is consistent with what are we watching here? What is going on? You know, what nefarious activities are going on within this church? We're not sure. And I'm not sure. And maybe the audience isn't sure.
Let's turn the page, Matt. As we said at the top, you spend a lot of time and put a lot of effort in with many of your friends with the Fargo Film Festival. It just recently concluded. How did it go?
Great. We had great audiences. I feel like the quality of the films in all seven of the categories was the strongest we've had since pre-COVID. You may recall, or you probably don't because you weren't living here then, the 2020 and 2021 film festivals were canceled due to COVID. So we've been in person the last 3 years. And I think just like with normal mainstream movies, the quality is better now than it was during what I call the COVID years. So we've got films that have been shot post-COVID without people having to wear masks on the set, and you have access to what you want to do. So the quality was very high. I think my highlights were I was the narrative feature chair this year, and we had 8 films make it in, and 3 films had people representing their films, and I got to do the Q&A with all 3 of those movies. Vivian Kerr, the actress from Scrap, was amazing. David Zumbrunnen, the actor from The Problem of the Hero, did a Q&A with him. He was amazing. And then 2 actresses from Daughter of the Sun, the film shot up in Canada, were here as well, Nia Perkin and Courtney Sawyer. So those were all probably highlights for me, just getting to do the Q&A and hearing the audience response to those movies as they ask questions of these performers and directors and actors as well.
Matt, how was interest in this year's Fargo Film Festival?
It seemed high. I mean, I think people want to come. They want to see films that they don't normally see at the Cineplex. We had 2 Oscar-nominated shorts, Nine and Waipo, and a letter to a pig that both were in the film festival. So next year's the 25th anniversary. I hope we have some big announcements to make with some big guests, but we will see.
We'll look forward to that, Matt. Matt, you have some more century-like news for us.
Yeah, we're coming up on a lot of centenaries for a lot of big movie people. We had Lee Marvin a couple months ago, and coming up Wednesday, April 3rd, Marlon Brando would have been 100 years old. He was born in Omaha. I've been to his house. I went to his house last summer and stood in front of it where he grew up, and he's my all-time favorite actor. Something hit me when I first saw him as a kid or, you know, early teens. Everything he did was interesting on screen. He certainly had an eccentric later life, you know, became almost undirectable, I would say, difficult to work with. The weight became an issue for him, but he remains this kind of pivotal figure in the history of acting, where there's pre-Brando and post-Brando. What he did was, with Streetcar Named Desire, with the method acting, becoming the first method actor to become a film star, it's kind of everybody that followed Brando kind of owes something to him. So he's an important figure in my life, and he would have been 100 coming up Wednesday. He passed away when he was 80 in 2004.
Makes me feel old, Matt, to realize that he would have been 100 years old.
Yep.
Back to where we started with a trivia question for you, Matt. One horror film has won an Academy Award. I'm sure you know that it is
The Silence of the Lambs, 1991.
And we've been to the movies with Matt O'Lean. More Main Street is ahead. Stay with us.
We'd like to thank the North Dakota Council on the Arts for supporting arts programming here on Prairie Public.
Support for Dakota Datebook is provided by Books on Broadway and Dakota Soda and Coffee Company of Williston, featuring coffees and a wide variety of books for children and adults. Books on Broadway, the independent bookstore for independent minds.
This is Dakota Datebook for March 28th. On this date in 1934, the Bottineau Courant announced to its readers that the community senior men's hockey team, the Bottineau Flyers, had won their first North Dakota Amateur Hockey League state championship. The road to the championship began in early March when Harold Ferguson, the coach of the Bottineau Flyers, declared that the Flyers were the state champions by pointing out they had won more games in 1934 than any other independent men's hockey team, had beaten some of the best teams in the state, and had won the Northwest Championship at the Minot Winter Carnival. By his statement, Ferguson challenged any other team in the state who felt differently. Grand Forks Dragons accepted the challenge. The team was ranked first in the state's Eastern Divisions and agreed to play a 3-game championship series at the Bottineau Arena. The action was hot right from the start. In the first period of the first game, the Foy brothers both scored for Grand Forks. Not to be outdone, Shorty Davis started the scoring for Bottineau, followed by Duke Davis and the captain of the team, Dan Gillis. In the second period, Walt Foy got another goal for Grand Forks, but it was all Flyers the remainder of the game, with Bud Smith scoring his first goal, and Duke Davis, Dan Gillis, and Bud Smith each scoring for a second time, making the final score 7-3. In the second game, the Dragons and Flyers played evenly for the first period, which was scoreless. But in the second period, Bottineau's Sig Liefer scored the first goal of the game with an unassisted shot from the blue line. A royal battle continued through the period with no other goals scored. In the third period, Dan Gillies broke it open with 2 quick goals for Bottineau, followed by Bud Smith,
Julius Davis, Shorty Davis, and Alex Gillis each getting a goal. Final score, 7-0. The Flyers were the only team in 4 years to shut out the Dragons. The last team to do so was a powerhouse Minnesota team, the Eveleth Elks, in 1930. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Scott Wagger. I'm Ann Olquist.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding by Humanities North Dakota, North Dakota's largest lifelong learning community.
And that's a wrap for today's Main Street. Thank you so much for joining us. Tomorrow in this time slot, it's The Middle with Jeremy Hobson. The topic, do you feel a call to serve your country? And at 7 p.m. Central, it's Science Friday with Ira Flato.
And coming up Monday on Main Street, we ride with her, a documentary about raising awareness about the missing and murdered Indigenous women movement. It screened recently at South by Southwest, and there is an upcoming showing in Bismarck. That's Monday on Main Street. Until then, enjoy the rest of
Opening Day.
Hey, all right. Play ball.